that can listen.
Let me ask you, Maoz, there are people, Israeli families in front of the Israeli military headquarters in Tel Aviv, whose families have been taken hostage, either mother, father, daughter, son. And they are there saying the same thing. We often see them in the media describing the horror of what happened to their loved ones. But then the media doesn't go on to say what they're calling for. What do you demand right now of Prime Minister Netanyahu when you talk about ending the war?
Again, I'm calling and I'm crying, not to Benjamin Netanyahu, not to the leader of the Hamas, not to President Biden. I'm crying for humanity, for the entire humanity, for the entire mankind. I'm crying to stop the war. I'm crying for immediate ceasefire, and I'm crying for hope. Hope that will take us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of the Dia de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st, from 12 to 10 p.m. at The Red on Salmon Street in Portland. Dia de los Muertos is an ancient celebration originating from the indigenous people of Mexico. Festivities will include altar creation, muertos face painting, sugar skull decorating, traditional Mexican food, and live musical performances. Again, that's the Dia de los Muertos celebration on Wednesday, November 1st, from 12 to 10 p.m. at The Red on Salmon Street, A31 Southeast Salmon Street in Portland.
Listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're in our annual fall membership drive. You can help us meet our $55,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution today. All donations will be matched up to $14,000 thanks to a generous group of anonymous donors. KBOO's independent programming is only possible with your support. Give now at kboo.fm/give.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is the KBOO Evening News. But before then, we'd like to thank recent donors to our fund drive. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Dana. And thank you, Richard, for continuing to keep your community radio station strong.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, an audit reveals difficulties in Metro's waste handling processes.
Jim Jordan fails to get the votes for Speaker of the House for a second time.
And in international news, the UN Security Council resolution to create a humanitarian pause in Gaza is vetoed by the United States.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 18th, 2023. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Metro's trash handling doesn't make the grade, at least according to a recent audit. It found that Metro's two trash transfer stations showed multiple problems, including the handling and tracking of hazardous waste and employee training. These two transfer stations handle around 40% of Portland's trash. They sort the material, then compact it, and send it off to the majority landfill in Arlington, about 150 miles up the Columbia River. Transfer site workers sort out flammable items like old propane tanks and lithium batteries, and hazardous materials like paint thinner, syringes, and fluorescent bulbs, which contain mercury. But since the pandemic, they have not been getting adequate training on how to do so, and the audit connects that lack of training to 27 incidents last year. Of particular concern to the auditors was the handling of some 100-year-old radioactive medical supplies and a hand grenade. An investigation found that the disposal of those items ended up being okay, but it's what first sent the auditor looking into trash safety. The report faults, quote, a lack of basic management practices and commitment to a long-term vision, and calls for, quote, sustained attention at the highest levels to fix it. The Metro South facility is one of the busiest in the nation. It reached its maximum capacity in 2008, but little has been done to expand or replace it.
Disabled and mobility-challenged residents at Selwood Center Apartments have been stuck in their building since October 10th, when the only elevator broke. The apartment building is managed by Home Forward, Portland's largest public housing nonprofit. The elevator stopped working over a week ago after the building was damaged by a small fire and water from sprinklers. Residents have had limited access to the outside world ever since. Home Forward says their contractor, Otis Elevator Company, is still waiting on parts to repair the elevator. They say they hired a private security company 2 days later to help residents up and down the stairs and with groceries. Residents say help has been hard to come by. One resident scooted on the floor down 8 flights of stairs in order to make a doctor's appointment. When the resident returned, staff couldn't get her back up, so Home Forward provided her with a hotel room. Other residents are being relocated as well.
The outdoor equipment store REI is laying off 275 employees across the country, including some in Oregon. The company is laying off people in so-called lead roles. They plan to start a staffing system that includes a new category of part-time worker. REI said it was laying people off partly so that remaining workers would have more predictable schedules. The REI union announced it is going to pursue legal action in the coming days. The union said, quote, instead of honoring the expertise their most veteran employees bring to the co-op, REI made the callous decision to lay off tenured staff even while they are still hiring new staff at lower wage rates, end quote. The union said the company is required by law to negotiate before making major layoffs. The layoffs affect 13 employees in Oregon and 19 in Washington. REI is a consumer's cooperative business, not a worker's cooperative business. And there are currently 8 unionized REI stores out of 179 nationwide.
Fire scientists are combining traditional methods with artificial intelligence to fight fires in Montana and across the American West. The new tool also draws on local landowner expertise, as Mark Moran reports.
Fire science experts have used natural fire breaks, roads, bridges, and land masses as ways to slow fires for a long time. Now they're adding AI to the mix. With spatial analytical data and satellite imagery, fire managers use potential operational delineations, or PODs, to draw lines on a map that allow them to predict fire behavior now and in the future. Kit O'Connor with the U.S. Forest Service says PODs are like geographical containers, but not always just for fighting a fire while it's burning.
But it's to give you that bite-sized unit that you need so that you can start to think about the values that you're managing across the landscape and manage them kind of bite by bite instead of trying to take on everything all at once.
O'Connor says while creating these pods, fire managers also draw on the knowledge of local landowners so they and the Forest Service can cooperate on a plan for containing wildfires once they start. Once scientists draw pods for a certain landscape, the data are digitized and available to fire crews on a risk management website. O'Connor says the Forest Service is always developing new tools that help the agency use data to predict wildfire activity based on past behavior.
We look at how fires behaved on the landscape in the past and where they stopped, and what were the conditions where those fires stopped, and then we can map out those conditions across much larger areas and say these are the areas where we have the highest probability of success for potentially stopping a fire.
Some are critical of pod technology because it doesn't always call for full fire suppression in low-risk cases. But O'Connor says this type of planning is ultimately safer for firefighters in the urban-wildland interface and the people who live there. This is Mark Moran for Big Sky Connection.
Representative Jim Jordan fails to win the speaker's gavel in 2 different votes. Jewish peace activists in Washington call for a ceasefire in Israel. And Justice Amy Coney Barrett joins Justices Kagan and Kavanaugh in supporting a Supreme Court code of ethics. With more on those stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
A vote today to make the architect of a nationwide abortion ban, a vocal election denier, and an insurrection insider to the Speaker of this House would be a terrible message to the country and our allies.
California Democrat Pete Aguilar says heart-right Representative Jim Jordan failed to win the vote for Speaker because the Ohio Republican is regarded by many, some even in his party, as a legislative terrorist. Aguilar blamed the chaos in the House on extreme partisanship. 20 in the GOP refused to back Jordan when he could only lose 4. He's expected to try again today. With aid to Israel and Ukraine waiting, Colorado Republican Ken Buck told MSNBC if Jordan isn't elected, he'd support giving acting Speaker Patrick McHenry full power for 30 days.
Undoubtedly, we would give him full power so that if there is an Israeli package, supplemental spending package that comes over from the White House, we would have the ability to vote on that.
This comes as Secretary of State Antony Blinken announces President Biden is set to visit Israel to reaffirm U.S. solidarity.
President Biden will again make clear, as he's done unequivocally, that Israel has the right and indeed the duty to defend its people from Hamas and other terrorists.
With Israelis still counting the dead from Hamas attacks, hundreds have died when a hospital in Gaza was struck. It's unclear if it was hit by Israeli bombing or an Islamic Jihad missile that went off course. Jewish American peace advocates are protesting outside the Capitol today, calling for de-escalation and ceasefire. Jay Saber with Jewish Voice for Peace says they support a bill sponsored by Missouri progressive Cori Bush to stop what some call a potential genocide in Gaza.
The Jewish community is rising up in numbers that are completely unprecedented, pushing our politicians to make the right call to end a genocide that is unfolding in real time.
Bush is offering her resolution as an alternative to one giving Israel unrestricted support. 2,700 people in Gaza and 1,400 people in Israel have been killed in the war so far. Justice Amy Coney Barrett is the latest to voice her support for the U.S. Supreme Court adopting an ethics code.
I think it would be a good idea for us to do it, particularly so that we can communicate to the public exactly what it is that we're doing in a clearer way.
Barrett's comments match those of Justices Elena Kagan and Brett Kavanaugh. ProPublica reports that Justice Clarence Thomas spoke at a fundraiser for the conservative Koch brothers. Finally, to Arizona, Republicans Carrie Lake and Mark Fincham have again lost a court bid to ban voting machines. Fincham, who ran for Secretary of State, and Lake, who's running for Senate, claimed voting machines are untrustworthy. The court called their claims hypothetical conjecture. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. Hey, how are you?
Some Harvard students who had signed a letter last week saying Israel was entirely responsible for the Hamas violence saw their pictures and names on a billboard truck outside Harvard Yard yesterday with the heading, quote unquote, Harvard's leading anti-Semites. When one student saw her name and picture on the truck, she said, quote, I threw up in Harvard Yard. Some students affiliated with the groups that sponsored the letter have found their personal information posted online. Some had siblings back home threatened. Wall Street executives demanded a list of student names to ban their hiring. The billboard truck was paid for by the right-wing group Accuracy in Media, which has sponsored similar trucks at other campuses like Stanford and UC Berkeley. The group has purchased domain names for Harvard students associated with the letter and is setting up individual websites for them, which will call for the university to punish these students. Harvard has taken steps to ensure safety, including expanding shuttle service and closing the gates of Harvard Yard at night to people without university identification.
In news about the Israeli-Hamas conflict, the United States vetoed a United Nations Security Council resolution that calls for a humanitarian pause to airstrikes in Gaza today. The resolution said that the pause would allow aid to enter the Palestinian territory. Brazil sponsored the move, and it was supported by 12 of the 15 members of the Security Council, including France, Japan, China, and the UAE. The United Kingdom and Russia abstained, leaving the United States as the sole member to veto the resolution. The U.S. is one of the Council's 5 permanent members, meaning its veto ended the measure despite overwhelming popularity. Human Rights Watch condemned the U.S. vote, saying, quote, Once again, the U.S. cynically used their veto to prevent the U.N. Security Council from acting on Israel and Palestine at a time of unprecedented carnage, end quote. Yesterday, a Russian resolution calling for a humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza was also rejected. Russia's attempts to advocate for explicit ceasefire language to Brazil's resolution today failed and led them to abstaining. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Linda Thomas-Greenfield explained the veto, saying, quote, "The United States is disappointed this resolution made no mention of Israel's right to self-defense," end quote. As of Tuesday, Gaza health authorities had put the death toll from Israeli airstrikes at over 3,000 people. Israel has faced criticism for indiscriminately targeting civilians and civilian infrastructure.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $55,000 by the end of October. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots about his latest article on how city permitting procedure is holding back the development of a resiliency hub in the Cully neighborhood. At 6 p.m., it's Earth Riot Radio. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, Culture in Motion with Mike Crenshaw. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 46 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, sunny, with a high of 71. Today in history, in 1990, American professional basketball player Brittany Griner was born. She's a two-time Olympic gold medalist and six-time WNBA All-Star. In 2022, she was detained in Russia for possession of less than a gram of medically prescribed cannabis oil. She was released last December as part of a prisoner exchange with the United States. The quote of the day is from Griner, who said, quote, "You can't control injuries, but you can control how hard you work to come back."
It's day three of the Elders and Youth Conference in Anchorage, Alaska, and Guatemalan election protests turned deadly in a clash with armed vigilantes. With those stories and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. The third day of the 2023 statewide annual Elders and Youth Conference at the Denina Center in downtown Anchorage, Alaska, started off with a Native dance group from Unalakleet and a touching speech from youth keynote speaker, Indigenous land protector and model Quanah Chasing Horse, Gwich'in from Eagle Village, Alaska, and Oglala Lakota tribes of South Dakota. More workshops broke out in the early afternoon, which included salmon cutting, practicing self-governance, and the much-anticipated Native Youth Olympics. NYO was created by Alaska Natives to help develop crucial survival skills in harsh weather and environment. Today, the youth compete in the games to preserve and display their cultural identities in modern-day life. Maya Onishkian is a coach at the Lani Da'a School in Chickaloo Native Village, a small town just north of Palmer, and is also one of the NYO instructors. She came to the gathering with three students ages 8 through 10. She says NYO today is more than just physical strength and endurance.
It's about supporting each other, helping each other. So you'll see kids from different teams teaching each other how to do certain moves, helping each other out. So it's very different than most Western sports. And the cultural learning that they get, whether they're Native or non-Native, helps them appreciate Indigenous cultures.
One of Nishkian's students, 10-year-old Colt Jennison, shared what he's excited about doing during the workshop.
1 foot or maybe Indian, if there is Indian. NYO is awesome.
Duke Ngo, another instructor and a coach from Juneau, is anticipating the 2023 Arctic Winter Games, which will be held in Alaska this year. He says while he's not certain yet about his involvement with this year's competition, he's looking forward to the games coming to his home state.
It's really exciting, and we'll definitely hope Team Alaska would do their best to do their best and be able to have fun at the games.
As the Elders and Youth Conference is beginning to wind down, preparations are underway for the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention taking place at the same location starting Thursday. Guatemala's three-week-old popular uprising led by the country's indigenous citizens is beginning to turn bloody. At least one protester has been killed as armed vigilantes attacked a group of protesters on Monday. The uprising's indigenous leaders say they're fighting to save their country's fragile democracy. More from Maria Martin.
As this week started, there were fewer blockades across Guatemala, but people are still leaving their indigenous communities to come to the capital to protest and demand the resignation of corrupt Justice Department officials. Meanwhile, Guatemala's Attorney General Consuelo Porras is calling for the government to use force against the hundreds of thousands of largely indigenous peaceful protesters. The protesters want her resignation and that of other officials leading an investigation against the party of anti-corruption president-elect Bernardo Arevalo. 48 Cantones leader Luis Pacheco expressed disappointment that Guatemala's president, Alejandro Chamartey, ignored their demands during a recent dialogue.
Sigamos orando, sigamos en esta lucha.
We maintain hope and prayers that the struggle, a peaceful effort for democracy, has a good outcome, says Pacheco. But yesterday, in various places, violence broke out in the indigenous community of Malacatan in the border province of San Marcos, for example. An armed group of vigilantes attacked the protesters. A food vendor who was part of the protest is reported dead. More are hospitalized. Representatives of ancestral authorities say they'll be coming together soon to discuss next steps in light of the violence. For National Native News, I'm Maria Martin.
I'm Jill Freitas.
Student loan payments are back on the table this month, and experts offer guidance for pursuing higher education without accumulating excessive debt. Shantia Hudson speaks with Brian Walsh from SoFi in Georgia. He emphasizes that careful financial management and exploring alternative educational paths can help ensure a cost-effective college experience.
As student loan payments resume after a three-year halt, experts offer advice on pursuing higher education without accumulating unnecessary debt. SoFi's financial planning manager, Brian Walsh, emphasizes the importance of careful financial management to keep college costs low amidst rising interest rates and daily expenses. To achieve this, he suggests considering the earning potential of the desired degree and making informed decisions about where to pursue it.
So that could be going to a different school that offers a better financial aid package. It could be going to a two-year school before transferring to a four-year school. It could be working part-time while in school to kind of offset some of those expenses.
According to the Education Data Initiative, Georgians have higher student loan debt compared to students in other states. On average, college graduates in Georgia carry more than $40,000 of student loan debt. Walsh advises students to consider future career paths and highlights the potential benefits of working for a nonprofit or government organization.
Basically, what happens for public service loan forgiveness is if you make 120 qualifying payments, which means you work at a qualifying organization and you make a payment like income-driven repayment, for example, after those 120 qualifying monthly payments, the balance of the loan would be forgiven.
Right now, under the Biden administration's reforms, people can receive credit for the years they have worked since October 2007, even if their loan was in forbearance and they have ceased making payments. Some terms are set to expire on December 31st. Additionally, Walsh recommends that students utilize the resources available on studentaid.gov. For Georgia News Connection, I'm Shantia Hudson, Finder Trust Indicators on publicnewsservice.org.
A new report rates every state on how it handles voter redistricting, and it finds that Oregon's process is lacking in some key areas, including getting public input. State legislators draw voting lines using census data, which leaves the process open to politics. Eric Tegedoff reports.
Oregon has room to improve when it comes to drawing voting district lines, according to a new report. The nonpartisan elections watchdog Common Cause gives the state a grade of C- for its redistricting process, which happens when states receive census data and use it to map the borders of legislative districts. Head of Common Cause Oregon, Kate Titus, says Oregon is a model of democracy's best practices in many respects and consistently has high voter participation.
But when it comes to redistricting, Oregon has a process that's controlled by the legislature. And that's inherently problematic because legislators have a conflict of interest in drawing the lines of the districts that they're going to run in.
The report criticizes Oregon for inadequate public outreach and failing to incorporate public input, especially from Confederated Tribe of Warm Springs members over their concerns that the map split their reservation from the nearby city of Madras. Dan Vicuña is the director of redistricting and representation for Common Cause. He says in past decades, redistricting was a relatively unknown and unscrutinized process. However, Vicuña believes the public is increasingly connecting the shape of voting maps to their fight for resources.
The public understands that whether you're kept in one district with a community that shares concerns of all sorts can really make the difference between having a champion in the halls of power or not having a champion.
Vicuña says the states that fared best in the report are the ones that took redistricting out of the hands of legislators in favor of independent bipartisan commissions. California and Massachusetts scored the highest grades, A-. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Portland Parks and Rec's Urban Forestry Department is giving away free trees this fall to Portlanders. Starting this weekend, people can pre-register and take home two trees for the residential address at a local drive-through pickup event. The drive-through pickups are on the east side and happen on October 21st, October 28th, and November 4th. This year, the pickup events are based in or near neighborhoods that are especially hot in the summer months and have been identified by the city as heat islands. Heat islands are areas of a city that retain heat and don't cool down enough because they may lack shade and green spaces. Registration for the tree giveaway can be done online, by phone, or by email. People can find more information and a list of available trees and care requirements online at www.portland.gov/free-yard-trees. Parks and Rec will deliver and plant trees for anyone with mobility issues.
Speaking of things that are good for the environment, newer, cheaper solar panels are just as durable as older, pricier models. That's according to a recent study at Sandia National Laboratories. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Between 2010 and 2020, the cost of solar panels dropped about 85%.
When you have a product that becomes cheaper, the question is, okay, now this is cheaper. Is it as durable as it used to be?
Marios Therestis is a researcher at Sandia National Laboratories. Since 2016, his team has been testing the performance and durability of more than 800 solar panels, including 13 different module types from 7 manufacturers. They're testing them in New Mexico, Colorado, and Florida to see how they function in a range of climate conditions. They monitor the panel's power output and assess how the modules are holding up physically, for example, if they develop cracks. The research reveals significant differences among the panels, but on average, after 5 years of use, they performed as well as older, pricier modules.
So far in this study, we found that despite the sharp reduction in costs, we have not seen any influence on the durability of solar panels, which is a very encouraging result.
His team will continue to monitor the panels. But he says the results so far suggest that consumers can feel confident that solar panels have gone down in price, but not in quality.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wonders if these times are too tricky for Halloween.
Did Biden go to Israel just to show he's vital and macho enough to have another term as president? Knowing that while he can move soldiers and warships around, he can't get more weapons to Israel or Ukraine or more aid to Gaza because Congress can't act without a speaker. If Biden gets killed, Kamala Harris would be president, and if she died, it would be the Speaker of the House, who doesn't exist. What a mighty world power the U.S. is. A paralyzed legislature, a multiply indicted ex-president. Meanwhile, Russia's war with Ukraine has not only caused the price of grain to rocket, but also the price of fertilizer, increasing starvation. And don't forget the price of oil, with winter almost here. With so many scary world would-be leaders out there making so many lives worse instead of better, let's keep Halloween non-political, dressing as kittens and Disney critters, or get real festive, going to neighbors' houses and giving them treats. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KABU Evening News for Wednesday, October 18th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories, tips, ideas, whatever, at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Andrea K. Hendrickson, Chris Gao, the credentialed Reed Johnson, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Shantia Hudson, Alex Gonzalez, Jill Freitas, Mark Moran, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is the luminous Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm the credentialized Reed Johnson. All of our KABU programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KABU is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kabu.fm/give, or you can text KABU to 44321. Stay tuned now for KABU News in Depth.
KABU News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KABU News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm here with Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots. We're discussing his new article called Impeding Progress: City's Decades-Old Zoning Policies Stall Project at Historically Black Church. Welcome to the show, Jeremiah.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. So, your new piece talks about the Morning Star Missionary Baptist Church in the Cully neighborhood of Portland and how their plans to reinvigorate the church and create a community space has been stalled by permitting and zoning. So to start out here, what is this project that Morning Star wants to create?
So the church, Morning Star Missionary Baptist Church, has partnered with DePave, a local nonprofit, to change a parking lot in the back of their church into a community green space.